over some money.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Better Silver for taking us through the afternoon here on 2FM. It's Friday the 27th of September and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7 o'clock, Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan preview the Premier League action as Guardiola and Arteta have their say on injuries and tactics. In the League of Ireland, we're live to Tala as St. Patrick's Athletic take on Shamrock Rovers, a side that are still in the title hunt. In rugby, Sharon Lynch previews Ireland's WXB opener against Blackburns. There's Aussie rules too. Declan Bogue looks ahead to the grand final featuring Tyrone's Conor McKenna. In racing, Jane Mangan looks back on Mistole and marks our cards for the weekend ahead. All of that, plus it's your very last chance to win the new EA Sports FC 25 game. And today we're throwing in an Ireland jersey too. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200. And we're on X. We're at Game on 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that it's Friday, so that means Alan Cawley is live in studio. Always a pleasure to have you in, Alan. I know you're going to be heading off to a League of Ireland game. We'll get to that in just a second. I want to mention, though, snooker commentator Clive Everton passing away at the age of 87. People know him as the voice of sport. He's been on the World Snooker Tour for a really long time and just a special voice and a special person and associated with so many memories, Al.
Yeah, evening, Marie. Good to see you as well. And yeah, it's a sad day for snooker because Clive Everton has been involved in it for as long as I can remember, anyway, his whole life. And as you say, there's these commentators that we come across over the years that you just associate straight away with that sport, and he certainly was one of them, Clive Everton. Really distinctive voice when it came to the snooker commentary, and it's very, very sad for his family and everyone. I know he was 87, but it's a sad day for snooker.
Yeah, it really is, and our thoughts are with all of his family. So as I mentioned at the top of the programme, that it is competition time. So you'll all know by now that EA Sports FC 25 launched today, and you might also know that we've teamed up with EA Sports and we're giving away a copy of the game every day this week. So to celebrate the launch of EA Sports FC 25, we want to give you another chance to win a copy and to throw in an Ireland jersey too. So to be able to chance to win today, all you have to do is answer the following question. In what year did the Republic of Ireland men's national team first qualify for the FIFA World Cup? Was it 2022 or 1990? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. To see 2fm.ie for all of the details. So the very last day of the competition, so please enter because it is your last chance to win the EA Sports FC 25 game and also the Ireland jersey as well. So Alan, it is a big day in the League of Ireland Premier Division. All teams are in action and all teams have something to play for.
Oh, it's a huge night, Marie. Really looking forward to it. Probably hasn't been the most vintage League of Ireland season, but it really has been very entertaining throughout, Marie. And we're getting down to the business end now and we're definitely set for a dramatic finish kicking off tonight because there's huge games all over the country. I'm heading off to Talca Park soon to see Shelburne, who are the leaders at the moment by 3 points to Derry and 4 points to Shamrock Rovers. But the huge game in Tala as well between St. Pat's and Shamrock Rovers. And you're probably going to ask me for a verdict on the whole overall picture in terms of the league. So will I just hold that?
Hold that, because we're actually going to go to Tala Stadium for that huge game that you mentioned between Rovers and Pats. Oisín Coyne is there. Oisín, is it a bit early for team news or do you have some for us?
It is quite early, Marie. Good evening, though. Welcome to what is a sun-kissed Talca Park. No team news yet, and it's a very quiet stadium at the moment. We are just under 2 hours from kick-off, but the atmosphere is building around Tala. I did see it driving in, and the rain has died off as well, so the fans will be making their way over this way shortly. You did mention, though, it's 3rd vs. 7, Shamrock Rovers versus St. Pat's. Alan said it's not too vintage, but not many leagues in world football can say every single team is in the mix for winning a league title, qualifying for Europe and trying to stay in the division with just 6 matches to go. Tonight's fixtures filled with pressure for every side and sure to be filled with nerves. Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley oozing with confidence ahead of this clash, though, believing his players are starting to produce their best after taking 4 points from Derry and Galway. Graham Burke sealing that Dublin Derby victory last Monday against Bowes. And Pats are said to bring a harder challenge, but the Hoops boss knows coming up against Stephen Kenny's led Saints, it will not be easy, Marie.
Especially Pats are in a bit of form. Should they love nothing better now to go out to Tala Stadium and to quality of it for Shamrock Rovers, but as you said, they're a confident bunch out there in Tala, Oisin.
Yeah, like Pats have three league wins on the bounce now, and I think they've scored 9 goals in those games as well. So they've a real threat going forward. Like, you look at Jake Mulroney, Mason Melia, Chris Forrester, Zach Elbazetti, like, all really good players. And Rovers, obviously, they're playing well as well the last while. But it has really has the makings to be a quality game. It's two teams who will go for the win. So that makes for an exciting prospect, to say the least. And I suppose you mentioned Pat showed their class in the last while, that 3-0 win over Waterford last week, and they could climb the table as well in the next coming weeks. So a positive record as well for Pats this season. I think it's 2 wins and 1 draw in their 3 league meetings against Rovers. So, and I was here for that 2-2 back in May as well. Pats really dangerous during set pieces, so we could see a bit of that this evening.
Okay, well, look, we might come back to you later on, because as you said, it is a long time before the match gets underway. And yeah, you might have some team news for us, because there's so much to play for. So we'll be chatting to you later on again, and also we'll be previewing the rest of the games with Alan. Oisin, thank you so much. Enjoy the Tala Stadium experience, and we'll talk to you later on. Alan, listen to this for an evening.
Okay.
Timmy, my son, 12 years of age, dropped him to go play pitch and putt in Bóthar na Breanna and Tala, and then he's strolling down to the match.
I love
Isn't
it.
That lovely?
I played pitch and putt in Bóthar na Breanna as well. He's in for three. He is. And then now to a brilliant match in store. As Oisin said there, St. Pat's themselves and Drogheda are probably the form teams in the league, but Shamrock Rovers have also picked up in recent weeks, and now they're in the race, Marie. So we're in for a hell of a night tonight. And I do think, if Shamrock Rovers can get the job done tonight and have a huge game then next week against Shelburne, if they come out of those two with 6 points, I'm going to go 6, I think they'll win the league.
Is this going to be Shamrock Rovers' toughest challenge, do you think, just given the form that Pats are in? I know they're going to be kind of going, taking fast with games now with European stuff coming as well, but it just feels like tonight's big one, Al.
Tonight's massive, yeah, and coming off the back of beating Bohemians as well during the week, Graham Burke with a brilliant goal. It's huge tonight, and that's why I'm saying, Marie, if you look at the 5 games that they've left, they've St. Pat's tonight, who you could argue, as I just said, are the form team in the league. They've Shelburne, who probably still will be the leaders in the league next Sunday. After that, if they're to come through those with 6 points, they have Drogheda away, Dundalk away, and Waterford at home. No disrespect to those clubs, but that's the best of the run-in when you look at, compared to what Shelburne have and what Derry have. So I think if they were to get the 3 points tonight, their tails will really be up, and they'll really fancy getting the job done and getting this league title. Shelburne, who were under huge pressure, I'm heading over there. They're 1 win in 8, Marie, and they're playing against Sligo Rovers, who are obviously going for European places as well, so they have a lot on the line tonight as well, Sligo Rovers. And they just need to stop the rot, Shelburne. It's been such a torrid run. I actually met, he's a neighbour of mine, Matty Smith, in the supermarket during the week, and had a little bit of a chat with him. He said they're very relaxed and calm, and Matty's quite a calm character as well. But I'd say under that kind of exterior, there's a lot of pressure at the moment in Tálchan Park, so it's a huge night for them. And then Derry, who are going to Drogheda, and Drogheda have been in unbelievable form, to be fair, Marie. So that's a tough game away from home, and they're good at home, Drogheda, as well. So a huge night in store, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, just on Shelburne, and we keep talking about the pressure, Al, but they've got 4 of the next 5 games at Tálchan, which is great for them. But do they have the players now? Because they lost so many players along the way for different reasons, going back from on loan moves and that. Do they have the players to go and win games? We know they're brilliant defensively, but they need to score a few more goals.
And that's been the problem for them, Marie. You know, the goal scoring return, and they lost Jarvis, who you could argue at that stage was probably the player of the year in the league, not just the best player for Shelburne. And then at the back, they lost their best centre-half in Gavin Malloy as well, probably the best young centre-half in the league. So to be fair to Damien Duff, it's been hard if you lose. You ask any manager if they were to lose their 2 best players, it's hard to replace that. Even though he did bring in reinforcements and he was able to sign 5 or 6 lads in that kind of period when in the off-season, but it's hard to replace them, it really is, Marie. And you look at their form, as I said, 1 win and 8. The only thing I go back to though with them at the moment, if you had to say it to Damien Duff at the start of the season, you'd be 3 points clear of Derry and 4 points clear of Shamrock Rovers with 6 games to go, he would have absolutely snapped your hand off at that stage. So if there was some way he can kind of reinforce that point to the players and basically try and start the season from now, and I know that's hard because of all that's gone and the run that they're on, but if he can try and just start from scratch, get the victory tonight if they were to beat Sligo Rovers, and then you're in a situation where you have 5 games to go and try and win a league, and all the other stuff will be forgotten about if they get the win tonight, because they'll just be focused solely on marching forwards with those 5 games left. So it's still all to play for. I wouldn't rule them out yet, but just because of the run of form and what they're up against as well, because not only they've Sligo Rovers tonight, and you mentioned that they're at home, but they've Pats at home on Monday, they've Shamrock Rovers away next Sunday. Just because of that current run of form, you just can't see them winning those games.
I know, it's a lot, isn't it? But Sligo Rovers, if they even got the win tonight, Al, that could be the start of it.
And that could be the start of it. That's the thing. Tonight's huge because you don't want to be looking too far ahead. You have to look at, obviously, the next game. I know it's an old cliche, but their whole mood and mindset could change if they get the victory tonight, because then you can focus solely on the games that are upcoming, bouncing into them with a bit of confidence if you get the victory. Whereas if they were to lose again tonight, and you speak to anyone outside that covers the league and fans and supporters, and we all go to it, everybody feels as though the wheels have come off in Tálaga Park because of that run of form. But they could slowly but surely staple them stabilisers back on tonight, really, if they get the victory. And who knows after that? It's exciting, it is. I know, as I said,
Are they in a position that they're still ahead when you think of the run of form?
Well, that's what I said. It hasn't been a vintage League of Ireland. Because in terms of quality, that's what I meant. It hasn't been. Because if you think that you only won one game in eight and you're still top of the league by 3 points, that shouldn't really be happening, Marie, to be honest with you. But all the other teams have been so inconsistent. And that's why I still give Shelburne a chance despite that run of form. Because I couldn't bank on Derry winning five or six on the trot in the next day. They'll draw points because they've been so inconsistent all year. Shamrock Rovers are the only ones, because they've been there and done it, and with the squad that they have, that I feel are capable of going and winning three or four on the bounce. And if you think of that really poor decision up in Derry last week, they should have won that as well, and that would have been three on the bounce. So they're the ones that I think tonight's the biggest night for them. I think if they were to pick up the 3 points against St. Pat's, I think they'll go on and win the league.
Big night for Dundalk and Bowes as well.
Well,
the
Bowes
other side
are,
of the table.
Yeah, and Bowes are looking over their shoulder, and that's a position that they don't want to be in. I watched the game against Shamrock Rovers, and I have to be honest, they were poor in the second half. It only looked like there was only going to be one winner, and that was Shamrock Rovers, and Graham Burke came up with a brilliant goal. Two wins in 19, really, like, it's a poor run of form, it really is. And I know Alan Reynolds, we spoke about, he came in, and to be fair to him, he inherited a lot of players that he probably didn't want in terms of the previous manager and what he had brought in. But he's there a long time now. You still need to be picking up the odd result here and there. And I felt they had turned the corner in their last three or four matches. But that defeat against Shamrock Rovers doesn't, like, it was a really poor one during the week because of the performance. Earlier games that were actually not probably picking up the result, but the performances were good. And you can kind of, you can almost take the positives out of those games because you feel as though we're on the right track here, we're playing well, we're just not getting the result. But if you don't perform well and you get beat, it's very hard to take any positives from that. And that's why they're going up to Dundalk tonight, fighting for their lives, as we all know. And they need to pick up 3 points, Bohemians. They're under pressure because Drogheda, the run of form that they're on, all of a sudden, Bohemians are looking over their shoulder.
Dundalk, though, like,
I can't see that. Yeah. I can actually see Bohemians beating Dundalk tonight and kind of getting themselves safe or getting themselves into a bit of a little bit more secure. I just think with all the trouble that's going on off the pitch, it's very hard. And I think John Daly deserves a bit of credit. He's handled it quite well. Mm-hmm. And the players, to be fair, I read an interview with John Mountney during the week, and they're still approaching the games very professionally. Yeah. As they'd expect, and feeling as though they have a chance. But I can't see. I think they're gone. I think they're doomed, Marie.
Okay, on that note, we're going to switch our attention to the Premier League, and I'm delighted to say that Fergal Brennan is with us as well. How are you, Fergal?
Very good. Looking forward to another busy weekend of Premier League football.
Would you follow the League of Ireland now? Listening to us every week talking about it.
I do, I'm a bit of a fair weather fan, in the sense that as we're building towards the title race, I'm taking a bit more of an interest in it. And just listening to Alan there, I think so much of it does come down to just holding your nerve in the final few weeks. I know that's a big cliche, and you can kind of throw that at the Premier League or any major league, really, but that's what so much of this comes down to. You almost don't want to kind of dance over the finishing line. You just want to get it done. Mm-hmm. You want to maintain a bit of a gap between yourself, which is the situation obviously with Shells, and the rest, and just get over the line, even if it means scrapping and scrambling around to get those last few points. That's all that matters at this stage of the season, and it is completely in their hands as it stands now.
Fergal, someone with the profile of Damien Duff, would that kind of reach any, I suppose, airwaves over there, or news headlines, the job that he has done at Shelburne? Because I definitely think if he was to go on and win it, it certainly would.
I think it does, obviously, because of the name that he is, that already attracts a bit of attention. I think particularly, there's obviously been a lot on social media of that he's quite straightforward in answering questions and his opinion on things. He's obviously given his two pence on the situation with the Ireland national job as well. So all of that keeps him firmly on the radar. I suppose the difficulty is just picking the right club. If an offer was to come in, realistically, probably would be a Championship or maybe a League One side at this stage of the game, even if he did win the title. It's just been a situation where you've seen coaches do it before, and it's been either a poorly advised move or just the wrong move. You would hope that with the connections that he's got here, if a team was to come in for him, that he wouldn't make a decision that was just seen as, I've got to take this opportunity because a chance to manage in England might not roll around again. You'd hope that the personality that he's got and the kudos that he's got in the English game, that he'd have that bit of a luxury to say, no, I'll wait until the right opportunity comes up before making that jump, which I think a few have done in the past, and it's been a bit of a mistake.
Yeah, he does seem like the type of personality that would weigh things up, and there's other things more important, I think, than...
He's his own man, he makes up his own mind, Yamri. He definitely wouldn't jump. And by all accounts, he's happy as Larry to be here. You know, he doesn't want to
loves
go.
Loves what he's doing.
But and that's all good and well, and that's fine. I just think if something came up really big, it'd be very hard to turn down.
Yeah, but what are the chances of something really big coming up?
Well, what's really big?
The Chelsea job. What's really big to you?
I definitely think a big Championship club.
Yeah, fair.
He could jump at that.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. Okay, well, we're going to start our Premier League chat with Pep Guardiola, because he confirmed the news that everybody expected, really, that Rodri is going to be out for quite some time because of that injury. Let's hear from Pep on Rodri.
Could you just tell us if there's any update on Rodri and the extent of his injury, please?
Got surgery this morning, ACL and some meniscus, I'm seeing. So next season we'll be here.
So this you don't even think it'd be in July? Or
this season is over.
I mean, that's obviously the kind of worst news on Tuesday. You said it might not be as bad. But.
Yeah, unfortunately, got the worst, but it's where it is. In that level, sometimes, unfortunately, happen. We are there to support him, and good recovery step by step and move forward.
Could I just ask you, from a managerial perspective, you've said he's irreplaceable, but then it's your challenge to replace him, and you've got numerous brilliant players to do that with. How do you go about thinking for games how you replace him? What components of the game go into your mind to work out what is the best way of covering?
What he gives us, so we don't have a... Not similar players, but the other players all together can replace what Rodri has or have given during since arrived to us. So we have to do it as a team, and we have to find a way, to play during a lot of months without an important player for us. Everybody knows it, and like all the teams want, is speedy recovery for next season, compete against them.
Is your team more able, do you think, now to cope without Rodri than maybe they've been in the past, with having Gundogan back, with having Kovacic as well, the other defenders, of course, who have inverted in their roles? Do you think your team now is more able to cope than maybe in the past?
If we win, yeah. If we don't win, it's because we miss Rodri.
Do you have more confidence that you can cope?
There's no one day in the last years that I was not confident. Of course, we are stronger with him. We are stronger with Nathan Ake. There's no playing since arrive, international break. We are stronger with Oscar Bob and all the injuries with Kevin, and we know that, but it's what it is. So we don't want it, but football happened, and it's a pity because it's a long injury, and of course it's a... 8-9 months, and after it's not, because after in 1 month you have to be ready, and after that come the muscular injuries. You have to be careful, because when you have an ACL injury 8-9 months, year after you have a problems, muscular problems for sure. So that's why it's longer. So I think Rodri will become his best after not just 8-9 months, but it's what it is. As a club, we have a magnificent players, and we'll find a solution, and we'll see what happens.
Can I ask you about Kevin De Bruyne as well? You mentioned him there. Is he available this weekend?
No.
How long do you think he'll be missing for?
I don't know. Before maybe international break or after international break. So we'll see.
Pep Guardiola there speaking about Rodri's injury and a whole lot more. Fergie's a great character, to be fair, but there were good questions, I have to say, by the journalists, and especially that one about whether or not Manchester City are maybe better prepared right now to play without Rodri. What do you reckon?
I mean, I didn't really expect anything different. I was speaking to a colleague this afternoon who was there, and he kind of said that they got the answers they expected, because he does like this kind of riddles in the way that he answers questions sometimes. And Rodri's the best in the world in his position. I would agree that, yeah, in terms of squad depth, they are better prepared. But also, I don't think they've ever had as much weight on the shoulders. I'd almost say that never under Guardiola has a player been as important at such a specific role. Erling Haaland is incredible. They've had amazing players in the past, and they still do. But he carries so much on his shoulders in terms of how important he is, and the fact that nobody else does what he does. Haaland is obviously irreplaceable, but you can play players that score goals and win you games, not to the same numbers that he does. Nobody comes in to either that Man City team or any team in the world and does what Rodri does. I think that's the kind of roundabout point that Guardiola was getting to. So they do have more players in, and obviously Gundogan coming back is a big one because of the quality and the experience that he's got. But he knows, particularly in them big games, when you play Arsenal again, Liverpool, United, the bigger Champions League games further down the line, Rodri's so important, the control that he gives them in the middle of the pitch, to say to Silva and Foden, De Bruyne, Haaland, Doku, everybody, to effectively go off, impact the game and win the game. That's what they're going to miss. And whoever steps in, or whether it's a team effort and maybe they rejig the way the midfield sets up, everybody is going to have to do a bit more, because everybody in that team has been planning for the season with Rodri next to them, and now that's just not the case.
But Hal, they're not really vulnerable, are they?
They're not vulnerable in 90% of the matches, but they will be vulnerable against Arsenal. They will be vulnerable in the latter stages of the Champions League, and that's why they will cater for it up until those games, and that'll be fine. And even if you look at a small sample size of the start of the season, they were able to cope without him in those four or five games until he came back and won the games no problem. You even look at Spain against England in the Euros, he went off at half time and they were able to cope with that. But over a longer period, and particularly in the big games, Marie, and that's why the stats back all this chat up, because if you look at the amount of games that when he's in the team that he's won compares to the ones when he wasn't, like, it's staggering, it really is. And that's how influential he is. I wouldn't be having the violin out and crying for him or any sympathy towards an injury. I would for Rodri. Nobody wants to see him getting injured. But I mean, in terms of Man City and the players and the squad that they have, he's in no position to be whinging and moaning. Guardiola, he has the best players in the world at his disposal, and now it's a solution he has to come up with and try and deal with that. And that's what makes the best managers, and I'm sure he has plenty of solutions. But I wouldn't be too kind of sympathetic towards the problems that he will face in not having Rodri, but still having Kovacic and Gundogan and De Bruyne and Foden and Haaland and all the other ones. So they will be fine in 90% of the games, but that's why I would even strengthen my case for Arsenal now again, even to lift the title this year.
Would be nice to see someone different, that's for sure. Fergal, the big one of the weekend is Man United and Spurs on Sunday at 4:30. I think it's fair to say that neither of the team are all guns blaring. What's that?
Blazing.
All guns blazing yet, Fergal. What do they need to do, though? What could Manchester United and Spurs both do this weekend to win?
Well, to be a bit more positive about United than we have been over the last few weeks, because I still maintain this thing that you don't know what you're going to get. The performance against Palace last weekend, the first half, maybe even up until the hour mark, is the most complete I've seen United this season. They just didn't finish their chances. And Palace are a very good team. They're away from home. They've got a bad record away at Crystal Palace. And they were excellent. They just couldn't score. So that's the difficulty. If Erik ten Hag is able to harness that and just say to the players, listen, there was no major issue last weekend. We just didn't finish our chances. Go out, maintain the confidence that you've got from that performance and try and replicate that against Tottenham. The issue then is 20 midweek, they were poor again. So it's very, very hard as a manager in Erik ten Hag's position to kind of say to the players, particularly if there's rumours that they are starting to lose faith in him again, that he knows what he's doing and that they are able to kind of rouse themselves and produce a performance. Because we saw against Palace that it is there, however deep down, it is still there in the players and in terms of their team performance. It's just not being shown nearly enough. Spurs last night got the job done. It was an odd one against Karabag. The kickoff was delayed and they got Dragozan sent off after, I think, 7 or 8 minutes. But they got the job done and they were good for the most part. And I was quite impressed with them against Brentford last weekend. United against Tottenham is normally quite an exciting game if you're a neutral watching it. But Spurs, I still think Spurs have got a bit more freedom about them. As much as it won't take long for Postecoglou to feel a bit more pressure, at the moment, they're still a bit freer to go and play, go and impact themselves on a game, whereas there's so many eyes, there's so much attention on Ten Hag and United at the moment that they're under that weight of pressure, where Tottenham, it's not a free hit, but they can go to Old Trafford, they can put in a performance that they're capable of and possibly get a positive result as well.
Is that fair, Al? Fair assessment?
I know everybody eventually gets the sack in football management, but this is the most inevitable sacking that we are ever going to see with Erik ten Hag. Like, it's just a matter of time. I watched him. I heard Fergal there saying, obviously, about the Crystal Palace game, and they did play quite well. But missing the amount of chances that they miss isn't down to the fact that, oh, we'll go out and create them again, lads. It's a quality issue, and they just don't have the quality at the top end of the pitch. They've brought Xerxes in. He's okay, he's grand. Grand isn't good enough, Marie, for Manchester United. And that's the problem. Hoyland the same. These fellas are just grand.
But are they grand, Al, or is it a case that he's not getting the best out of them? Like, could they be better?
I think it's a bit of both, yeah, to be fair. And I think, and that's why we've seen him struggle for so long, because I watched the game against 20 as well, and FC 20 should have beat them. FC 20 in the second half were the far better team than Manchester United. And it's just a real problem for them. And I go back to the point that I said before, the international window, now with the new ownership, now with serious people involved and serious people in charge at the top end of the football club, they won't dilly dally and wait around this year. It's only a matter of time, Ree, and I can't see them waiting much longer. If he was to lose Sunday, I'm only waiting for the news that he's gone. Honestly, it's not going to change. And I look at Spurs and I watched them last night as well, and they're a crazy team. I love Postecoglou's approach, but it's madness what he does as well. They were down to 10 men last night, and Karabag, only for, again, a quality issue at the top end of the pitch, the amount of chances they had was unbelievable, because Spurs leaves themselves so open. They got the job done, the 1-3-0 against an average team in Karabag. But one thing for sure on Sunday, it'll be exciting to watch, and there'll be plenty of chances. I think Spurs are more capable of taking the chances than what Man United are, and I worry for Ten Hag. I worry for him on a weekly basis, Marie.
Yeah, just as you said, it does feel a bit inevitable, all right, but there has to be somebody else there too, Al, which has been...
Well, Van Nistelrooy has been very prominent now, coming up to the side of him. He's going to be... He'll be taken over in a few weeks, mark my words.
Fergal, Arsenal, Leicester City. Arsenal are getting a little bit of criticism maybe for being too defensive. It's understandable why they were so defensive against Manchester City, but against Atalanta there was a little bit of that too. Do we need to see more attacking football from them, and will we see that against Leicester?
Yeah, I think it was a situation that dictated it. Obviously the red card for Trossard meant that it was a completely different second half. I still think in those big games that we keep talking about, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal and Arteta are still naturally very cautious, because they are still fairly new to the table in terms of challenging for the title. So I think naturally they will sit off and they will be a bit more structured than some of the other big teams. But at home against Leicester, who I think still are one of the teams that haven't won a Premier League game this season, it's been a tough start for them. Going back to the opening weekend, they got a point off Spurs. It looked as if maybe they might kind of hit a bit of a roll. Hasn't happened. They're struggling. Steve Cooper's another manager under a bit of pressure. Arsenal at home should be absolutely fine. This should be a banker for them on the back of what was a pretty wild weekend last weekend.
I don't get the criticism, Marie. I thought they were brilliant, absolutely brilliant last week. And this is what I really like about this Arsenal team, is they can play both ways.
They're adaptable,
They will blow Leicester away tomorrow. And you look at it, how many games have we watched Arsenal? Now, Odegaard as well, to be fair, and it's crucial that they get him back. He's their creative force. But they're so good on the ball, so good in possession, blowing teams away. That's what had them in the position that they were in last year, pushing Man City. Then to go away from home. And what people have forgotten about is when they went down 1-0 last week, for the next 25 minutes when they went 2-1 up, they were the better team. And they were coming out creating chances. Then, of course, the sending off, and you have to adapt. Did I think he'd go with probably six at the back, which would have ultimately what it became, and three in front? Probably not. I thought he may have left maybe one up top. But they were brilliant. Mm-hmm. City, I would actually be critical of Man City and how poor they were in trying to break them down and trying to create chances. So I think Arsenal are in a great position, and Arteta will be loving it at the minute. Andrew's a bit of needle, and I love that as well.
That's what you want, Al. Lots of games, good games this weekend. We're not going to get through them all, but Chelsea-Brighton tomorrow should be a quite intriguing one as well. Lots of questions to be asked of both teams there, so that could lead to entertainment. Liverpool and Wolves tomorrow at 5:30 as well, the evening game. So loads to look forward to. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much. As always, looking forward to chatting to you again next week. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us, though. We'll be chatting about the AFL Grand Final. Jane Mangan is going to mark a card for the racing, and also be looking ahead to the Ireland-New Zealand women's rugby game.
RTE 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to rugby. The Ireland women's squad have their opening game of the WXV1 in Vancouver against New Zealand. And to look ahead to it, I'm delighted to say that former Ireland international Sharon Lynch joins me on the line. Sharon, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Look, looking forward to this game. But obviously, you know, it's tempered with, a little bit of trepidation as well because of the calibre of the opponents. But still, being at this level, no doubt, Sharon, is exactly where these women will want to be, testing themselves against the best in the world. But still, it is a huge challenge. How big is it?
No doubt it's a huge challenge, but this is what they want, this is what they signed up for. Look, there's no doubt they're one of the biggest teams in the world, one of the best teams in the world, but ultimately it's still 15 players v 15 players. Like, they'd be told this to death, you know, just focus on the player in front of you, focus on your game plan, and, you know, enjoy every minute of it. It's an unbelievable experience, and I think ultimately this is only a tournament to, you know, it's a big campaign to gain experience for the World Cup. That's what it's coming down to. It's bleeding new players, getting the depth in the squad so that everyone has a bit of experience then coming to a World Cup that they've all played against, you know, a big team in a big stadium, and, you know, and then the stage fright is minimised, and, you know, ultimately building depth. So look, it's a huge task, but I still think it's going to be cherished and enjoyed.
And when this team are heading in to face a team of the calibre of New Zealand, are they setting personal goals? Like, is it team goals? Like, what do you do in that situation? Obviously, winning the match would be unbelievable, but still, like, the odds are stacked against you. When you're facing up against such a strong opposition, how do you approach it?
I think, yeah, you're going to have your own personal goals, you're going to have team goals, you're going to have done all the preparation you possibly can, the hours you're reviewing, the analysis, the individual you work on, you're going to have for yourself. And, you know, they're going to all have, I suppose, big agenda to put in play. But look, at the end of the day, like, New Zealand are beatable. They were beaten in their last game.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that they have to take that, like, focus on what they can control. We beat them in the past. So, look, they're not the big, huge, you know, monkey on the back that they once were. There will be a tough game, but they're all going to be tough games.
Yeah.
So let's just focus on it being 15v15, focus on what we've done in training, and, like, focus on the last game and what we did well in that, and work on that and build on it. I think they just need to focus on little steps. This is just one more game towards the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's all they have that's the way they should be looking at it. I'd be looking at it anyway.
They have Canada and the USA as well, so it's just a case of, they've got a Six Nations coming up. They have a Rugby World Cup coming up. So if they can find out where they're comfortable, what they're good at, build on all those sort of things, a little bit of momentum and confidence, because they are heading into this, I think, Sharon, in quite a good place.
Yeah, I think looking at the last Six Nations, you know, won a few games, lost a few games, but ultimately, you know, finished on a high. They bled new players, you know, came out of it with real positivity, and, you know, I think we all felt it. The team felt it. You could see from them they enjoyed their rugby, and I think that showed dividends then against Australia. So I think they just need to keep that momentum going, as you said, and focus on that side of the game, and see whatever happens then. I mean, like, hopefully, yeah, Canada is another big game coming up. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, you know, in a better position than New Zealand right now, and then ultimately USA at the end, they're really going to target that game. So look, they're going to focus on New Zealand right now. That's the game in hand.
Yeah.
And after that, then we'll tackle the next team.
Okay, well, let's hear from a couple of the players, Aoife Dalton and Brittany Hogan.
Yeah, coming here is so cool. I mean, like, what an opportunity to play here against the World Cup champions. So yeah, I think everyone's kind of getting excited now.
be a big challenge ahead, as you mentioned, World Cup champions, but this is where the team want to be under Scott, competing against the best in the world.
Yeah, definitely, and like that's what we set out for, especially after this year's Six Nations. You know, we wanted to qualify, and that's what we did, and we found ourselves here in WXV1, and like that's where we want to be.
So we started off with like kind of more instally based sessions. So we were walking through in the hotel. We still got all of our content to try and get the brains working again. And then yesterday we had our first big blowout. So we were playing against the French. We had a good blowout in the Canadian rain, but it was very valuable to us to get that first hit on the grass and see some of the stuff that we were talking about in our meetings come to fruition. It is so valuable, especially because like you don't know what's, whenever you're training against each other, you kind of are aware of the special plays or like what's going to happen, or saying our lineouts, we know exactly what our moves are, so it's very easy to defend against them or attack against them. So to have a team that have no idea what you're doing, it's really valuable to see if our moves are actually going to work or if we need to scrap some. So it's really valuable time.
Now, Sharon, listening to the two women there, you can see that they're so happy to be there. And as you said from the outset, you know, they're seeing this as an opportunity to test themselves against the best around. From a practical perspective, though, what do you think that the Ireland team can get out of the next few weeks from these challenges, just from on the pitch, from style of play, from learning's perspective?
There's two aspects to this, in my view. I mean, a World Cup is such an unusual experience. You know, you can't replicate it in anything you do, and that's the experience part of it. And that's going to be daunting for a lot of these players. You know, some of them have never been in this position before, but I suppose the WXV experience, playing against big teams, playing in big big stadiums, you know, facing the Haka, walking into, I know they're not playing England, but like even the Six Nations, walking into a stadium like Twickenham, like they're all like real emotionally charged situations you can't replicate anywhere in training. So having all of that now and in advance of a World Cup is massive. But then I suppose you're training, you've Interpros just gone, you've the Six Nations, the Challenge Cup coming up. These are all like, you know, precursor to bigger games, and everyone wants to be part of the World Cup. Like that's what you want, that you're all aiming for. But you're training hours upon hours, like I said, the analysing, the preparation. So you want to try out what you do in training. You want to use those lineouts, those scrums that you've trained day in, day out doing, and like be in the game and score tries and train, like try out what you train for. So that's ultimately what they're going to be doing in camp. And when you do it over and over again, all you want to do is do it in practice, like put it into practice then in a game situation and play what's in front of you. So I think there's going to be an element of, you know, trying out what they've been doing in training and seeing how that works out, playing new players with each other and seeing what clicks and what works. So there's a lot of trial and error, and I think that's part of all of this as well, is seeing who fits well together, you know, and trying new players and really building that depth. So there's just a bit of a two-pronged approach, I think.
It does feel as well, Sharon, though, that there is more depth there than there's ever been before. What do you reckon?
Oh yeah, it feels like it. I mean, you can see a couple of names there that are still new, they're still been chopping and changing from, you know, the Six Nations coming through from the Interpro, even from the Australia game. Like there's definitely new people coming in. Obviously injuries will add to that too, you know, they won't be forgotten about either. Like they'll be itching to get back into the fold when the time comes. But look, it's brilliant. I think it's a great opportunity to give people their first cap, second or 30th, like whatever it may be. Like any game that they can get their feet wet in, like is a great opportunity for the team. And the squad as a whole, because I know from a World Cup, being a sub on a bench, like all you want to do is get on the pitch, show what you can do, and get that opportunity to play. Like, so look, every girl is going to want to show what they can do, and you're going to need a squad of whatever you bring to World Cup, but like 30 now, you know, you need them all between injuries. There's a long year there yet, so look, you're going to need every one of them.
Okay, well, look, it's something to look forward to anyway. I think it's on in the middle of the night, though, so I'm not sure I'll be getting up for that. Yeah, I'm actually planning on getting up for the AFL final in the morning, so I don't know if I can do two mornings in a row. Sharon, thank you so much. You'll be back on Monday to review the match with us, so we'll be talking to you then. You'll have to take all the notes now because we'll have to watch it back when we get up. But thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon. Looking forward to it. And that AFL grand final that I mentioned, which is on tomorrow morning. It's around 5:30 in the morning. We're going to be talking to Declan Bogue from the 42 after this break about Conor McKenna's role and what can we expect from that big game.
RTE 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. As I mentioned, we will be talking about the AFL Grand Final. I'm delighted to say that Declan Bogue joins us from the 42 to look ahead to that huge game between Conor McKenna's Brisbane Lions and the Sydney Swans. I think first, Declan, just to give people maybe that don't follow the AFL a sense of how big this is going to be in Australia at 5:30 in the morning, whatever time it's going to take place at.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me on, Marie. But you know, you're talking about the Melbourne Cricket Ground, the MCG. It's possibly an awful lot of people don't have an idea of the scale of this. Like, it is, if the Super Bowl is America's game, then this is Australia's game. Like, you know, this is the game where people meet for friends once a year when they definitely do make the point of meeting up as barbecues. Isn't it 100? I think there is going to be 100,000 people like at this place. Like, it is.
Okay, so it's bigger than the All Ireland final.
Picture Croke Park full to the gills, and then add another like 3/4 packed Clonus on top of that. You know, I have a cousin who's actually going over to it. He's in Brisbane at the moment, like, and the excitement over there. It's just huge, and then for the Lions to have three Irish people involved is just insane. Like, you know.
Yeah. So tell us who's involved then.
Well, Conor McKenna, we're definitely going to see him.
Yeah.
And he's the most prominent one. And then it's Dara Joyce. And that's possibly one of I find it the most intriguing one, because Dara Joyce, most people won't know this, he was a Kilkenny hurler. Kieran Joyce, I think. Was it Kieran Joyce's
captain of the Kilkenny minor team or something like that.
Yes, and promising. But, like, I mean, no one had any idea. He played very, very little football, but he played for Good Counsel in Wexford. That was a school.
Okay.
And then he was earmarked as one to watch. And then there's James Madden. Now, he'll be in somewhere way down the depth chart, as they call it. Like, he was from Dublin. A rare dub that would go over to play Aussie rules, like, because they normally find the life of being a dub is more tempting. But anyway, For three Irish to be in one squad in the grand final is something else. And I've got four children and one of them is only a year old, so I'll be up watching it at 5:30 anyway. But I advise anyone to get up and get a look at that.
Yeah, I think I'll be doing the same now. All right, it's in the plan for tomorrow, and I'm working my day around it. So we're going to see Conor McKenna. Are we going to see Conor McKenna starting, or is he going to come on?
He hasn't been starting much.
Mm-hmm.
His form, you know, they kind of took him by surprise last year, because when he came back, they sort of treated him like a first-year player, like an apprentice, sort of 18, 19-year-old coming into the squad, and they weren't giving him an awful pile to do a training. But then he went away and looked for it himself and done what they call extras. He admitted then, like, after having, he basically just started the first game and then was a mainstay, which, you know, sort of played, I think, 22 consecutive games. I could be completely wrong on that, but I think he played just something in the region of 24 consecutive games, which is just insane. And he said that when he went back to Tyrone, he didn't go into a gym for 2 years. He just didn't bother. Like, he wasn't. So he lost about 4 kilograms of muscle. So he had a job to get that all back on and back up to speed. This year, there's been a wee injury or two creeping in, and he was sent off to get a few more games in the lower level. It's not really like going off on loan to Plymouth or Gale or whatever if you're in the Premier League. They're much more fluid over there with, you know, if you're in Australia, you'll go and play in the Victorian Football League. It's just, you know, so he has got games, and then he got 6 minutes in the last game against Geelong. What a 6 minutes, because, you know, the game is played very lineal. You kick the ball forward, you turn around, you kick it forward again. Instead, like, he took a delivery and he had a chance of kicking his goal. He could have. Instead, he done the side foot at full pace to, his name escapes me now, I think he was Fraser Logan or something like that. And then he made it a 100% chance that your man couldn't miss. And it was very unusual, and it was picked up on all the sort of Australian rules podcasts and that, just how hard a skill it is to execute side of your foot with an oval ball into a man's chest going at that pace. Like, they do marvel at him about how he's able to just conjure up bits and pieces of skill, like probably his Gaelic football background, the way he played Gaelic football. But he's an asset, and you'll definitely see him in the final.
And who is going to win the final, do you reckon?
Sydney have been knocking on the door a wee bit more than Brisbane. Like, you know, I mean, Brisbane were in the final last year, but Sydney were there the year before that. Like, they had a massive win against Port Adelaide in the semi-final. So, it's a great novel final. Mm-hmm. But I'd be lying if I told you this, who's going to win and for what reasons. Like, you know, I know no more than anybody
we'll
else.
We'll have to get up at 5:30 in the morning.
Exactly, we'll all have to get up, yeah.
Ah, brilliant. Look, it's one to look forward to, for sure. Thank you very much, Declan. You've set that up perfect for us. As I mentioned, I will be up to watch it. Enjoy it, getting up. Sure you'll be able to get the bottles or whatever you need to do in the morning anyway.
Yeah. No, look, it's going to be... It is one of those things. It's a spectacular sort of... generally world sport. Like, you know, the people will make a fuss out of the Super Bowl, and they sit up till their eyes are, you know, so heavy on a Sunday night, Monday morning. But I think this is one for the daddies and mummies to enjoy at 5:30, because you're probably up anyway.
Exactly. Thank you so much. We'll be talking to you soon, Declan Bogue of the 42. We're going to do Racing with Jane now in just a minute, but I do need to say that there are other games beside the Premier Division on in the world of football. Kerry FC are playing Finn Harps in Mount Hawk tonight, and there's a very excited group of under 11 boys from Master Giha heading there. So hello to all of them. I know that they are listening. Well, I hope that you like racing, lads, because Jay Mangan is with us, and we're going to look ahead to actually look back first on Listowel. Jane, it was a great few days, particularly the Kerry National. We're staying in Kerry. We're talking to Kerry boys here, and we're talking about the Kerry National.
Yeah, it's one of the success stories of Kerry. I know they're fond of football, but they're not as consistent with winning as they are down at the Listowel Harvest Festival. 7 days, the crowds came. Ryan Moore stole the show on the Tuesday, two of his four rides winning. Obviously, Flooring Porter, the dual champion stairs hurdler, converted to fences, and he absolutely ran them riot by making all the running on Wednesday. It was an incredible performance from him. I think he's likely to go back over hurdles next, but it was a day that Keith Donoghue, the Flooring Porter Syndicate, and of course Gavin Cromwell won't be forgetting too fast.
Okay, so we have more racing, of course. Last day in Listowel, the Curragh this weekend, and racing in Newmarket. Talk us through it, Jane.
Yes, I'm on the road to Newmarket at the moment, actually. And tomorrow's race meeting is headlined by the two Group 1s, Achievely Park, where Dur Lions is Babouche, the unbeaten Phoenix Stakes winner, the filly who took down Whistlejacket. Well, she's back to put her unbeaten record on the line against Lake Victoria, the filly who won the Moigler Stakes just 2 weeks ago, and the French filly Daylight. I think Colin Keane and Dur Lions have a star on their hands, and I hope that she proves it again in the Cheveley Park. Half an hour later, the colt that she beat in the Phoenix Stakes is favourite for the Middle Park. That's Whistlejacket, the horse he went on to win the Middle Park, or the pre-morning even, in Deauville. He's favourite ahead of his stable companion, Ides of March. Don't forget there's a Michael O'Callaghan trained colt in there as well, Black Forza. There's two Group 1s tomorrow in Newmarket. The Irish have a very strong hand in both.
Okay, and then what about at home as well, Jane?
On Sunday, yeah, I'll be off to the Curra for the Cesara, which I hope the rain stays away because it's a huge field of 30 runners. The Galway hurdle winner, Nürburgring, currently leads the market for Joseph O'Brien. Joseph has a strong hand in this race, but there's a variety of horses in here, from dual purpose to actual proper jumpers. And I mentioned Gavin Cromwell with regards to his big win on Wednesday at Listowel. Well, he has a really good chance of taking this pot with My Mate Mozzie. The horse was third in the Copper Horse at Royal Ascot. He was placed in two Galway hurdles. And while he was a little bit disappointing last time, I think he's better off on the flat over 2 miles. Gary Carley's regular partner aboard. He's something around 14-1. I think the 30 runners, your bookmaker's surely going to give you a biggie to a place. There's 300 grand on offer. And I think My Mate Mozzie's going to take a chunk of that.
Okay, so Jane, taking into account all the weekend's race, and what is your tip for us?
Well, I have to give a special mention. The 10-4 race on Sunday features a horse called the Marty Party.
Oh, wow.
The Marty Party was mugged down in the Listowel on Tuesday. Ryan Moore, only Ryan Moore could have beat him. And I think Wayne Hassett taking £5 off him again at the 10-4 race. There'll be a fair bunch of supporters for the Marty Party on Sunday.
Okay, Jane Mangan, thank you so much for all of that. As always, love talking to you on a Friday. That is it from us. But we do have our competition winner. So as you know, all weekend, all week, we were giving away the copy of the EA Sports FC 25. And then today, because it was the last day, we threw in an Ireland jersey as well. And the winner of the competition is Aideen O'Leary. So Aideen wins today's prizes. Congratulations to you, Aideen. So that is it from us for today. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and do stay with 2FM because the official chart show with Blana Tracy is up next.
RTE 2FM.